This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we're back here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, online at WTK.com. It's time for the MGo Blog Roundtable, although the roundtable has been shrunk a little bit this week.
It's kind of like a two-man table. It's like a coffee table.
Yeah, and Anthony's here too. We're going to leave Anthony in the conversation, so at least there's three of us on the screen for everybody that's out there that's watching on social media. So we appreciate watching on Twitter and on Facebook and on YouTube, watching on Ticket TV. It is myself. I'm in the air chair today for Sam. We've got Seth here as well, but no Craig. He is traveling. No Brian. He's still on his time away as he as well. So. Yes, a 2/3-person conversation, but we're going to dig into football. A lot of footballs. Because it was funny, yesterday I messaged Seth and he asked what we were going to discuss. And I said we're going to talk about Miguel Cabrera, Memphis basketball, and Scott Frost. Now, we've actually talked about all three this morning on the air, so we don't actually have to dig back into them. But they are pretty interesting topics. But we're not going to talk about Rashid. We're not going to talk about Miggy. We actually might talk about Scott Frost because that's actually pretty relevant to could be relevant to Michigan football. Before we dig into Michigan, we did not get into the news out of the Big Ten yesterday. Did you see this from Northwestern? They had a big injury news yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Northwestern was going to be terrible anyway. People are like, oh, my God. First of all, the quarterback. Did you see who they're starting?
Well, so we were on the air yesterday and we talked about how Hunter Johnson was the surprise winner to be named their starting quarterback at Northwestern. We thought it was going to be the transfer in from South Carolina. Right. That was the thought. So Either the light bulb went off or they have major quarterback issues. And it's probably more likely the latter of the two. But the big news yesterday is the loss of Cam Porter, their running back. He's their starting running back. He was going to be basically the key to helping whoever that quarterback was going to be. And now he's out for the season with what they're calling a lower body injury. And for those that want a little bit of detail, he's the guy that took over the starting job late last season as a true freshman. He ran for 4 TDs in the last 3 games as their top guy. Big things were expected from Porter this year. Steve Clark sent me a couple of notes on him because he scouted Northwestern a couple of weeks ago. So now Andrew Clare, who had nearly 2,000 yards and 13 TDs, is going to be up. He's a transfer from Bowling Green. They was third team all MAC in a couple seasons down there. They also have Evan Hull, who has 25 carries on 209 yards last year. And they have an early enrollee 3-star Anthony Tyus, but their number 2 and 3 rushers from last year transferred out. Mm-hmm. And so their running back position was thin as it was. They lose their number 1 guy. Their receiver position isn't very deep. And so Michigan, who hosts Northwestern in Ann Arbor on October 23rd, that's a really different looking Northwestern team than even a year ago.
Well, it was already going to be a hugely Northwestern team, right? Like they lost, like their whole. I mean, Northwestern's whole thing is they get really good for a year and then they just fall off the table for a while.
It's the rebuild up.
Yeah. Right, like they lost both 2 of the linebackers out of that 3-man linebacker group that they had. They lost like most of their guys up front. Like this is the down year again. This is a comeback to earth year for Northwestern to begin with. That quarterback issue. That was a that's bad. They might have gone from being, and the running back thing, even with Northwestern, who like leans on their running backs way more than other teams do, right? Like they love to just like hand the ball off a million times to Justin Jackson, but like even them, running back is not like the biggest deal. Like, but running back is the most replaceable position. You know, Michigan got away 1 year. They had a great offense 1 year with True Wilson at running back. You're fine. The quarterback situation's terrible, but like that team, they're just whatever. I mean, Northwestern's not going to be good this year anyway.
It's the beginning of the recycle, so that in like 2023 or 2024 they're going to win the Big Ten West again. And
right as soon as we all think that they stink again, as soon as we're all sure that like okay now it's over, then they'll pop up again.
All right, so here you weren't expecting this question necessarily, but I know you've researched in particular Michigan's opponents at the crossover. But in general, so is it Wisconsin's division to lose again? Are we back to that stage with Mertz at quarterback and other parts, or is it Iowa's year? I mean, that's some pretty big early games.
I haven't looked at Iowa as much because they're not on our schedule, right. But I think Iowa has a chance. I think Wisconsin is always going to start that year. Wisconsin is always going to be the favorite in that division, right? Like, we even last year when we were kind of looking at Minnesota going, are those guys going to pop now? Is that time? It was still, you know, Wisconsin's year. And Wisconsin fell apart last year. But, like, the last time we saw them, they were just trampling us. And there were reasons that they fell off. I don't think Graham Mertz is as good as everyone's talking about. If you look at the other quarterbacks around the Big Ten, like, you know, there's a case to be made. He's, like, the second best quarterback in the Big Ten or something. But he's not... But I don't think he's that great.
That's also because the starting quarterback in this city has like one start under his belt. The starting quarterback at Ohio State has no starts and experience under his belt, right? You can keep going down. Clifford regressed. We talked a lot about Penn State yesterday. That was our preview with Steve Clark. Clifford regressed a lot, right? So you keep going on the list. Maybe Minnesota's quarterback, right? If he could bounce back, he'd be the guy that maybe it kind of jumps in that list based on what we already know about them.
Right. It's Michael Penix, and if Michael Penix can stay healthy, and that's it, right? Like, that is the...
He is the Big Ten quarterback position.
That's the Big Ten quarterback. Yeah. But Graham Mertz, I mean, he was so good against Illinois because they're Illinois. Which is makes me worry about Cade, because most of what we have from Cade is, you know, that, right? Like, we have Rutgers, which is the same thing as Illinois. It was just not a great defense. So, I mean, can you pick apart Illinois? Yeah. Could anybody pick apart Illinois? You know, probably.
So, well, obviously, I know I was going to throw it at you. I know you weren't. I know you very much look into Michigan's crossover opponents and may not, and don't look necessarily as much at the others, but... Since we mentioned Nebraska, and since we're talking about the crossovers and who's in the other division, we might as well mention that there is big news in Nebraska because of the news that broke yesterday. We were about an hour before the end of the show that the NCAA is investigating Nebraska. And it's interesting is how the announcement was put out by just about everybody. They led with there's footage of overuse of analysts and consultants,
right.
Which is not the lead. First of all, that's probably something that you can probably have footage of that for like 25 or 30 programs in America.
But what? What are you doing, Alabama. Ira? What are you doing?
Alabama to be first. Alabama was first. Okay, let's start with that. Second of all, we did have our head coach did answer a question about this last week on Friday, and they have resolved whatever that might be. But that's also my point. They buried the lead. The lead is that the head football coach told the head strength and conditioning coach to organize off-campus workouts and team activities and practices so that they would not be detected by on-campus non-athletic administrators and other types, so he broke NCAA rules they put in place for COVID. He flat out lied to his bosses.
Mm-hmm.
That to me seemed like they were burying the lead of what the actual investigation was really digging into when they announced that yesterday.
Ira, I got news for you. There's gambling in this establishment.
Whoa.
I mean, this is like when Rich Rod was practicing too much. It's the same exact thing. It's like, okay, oh, the strength and conditioning coach is organizing practices. Now, the difference is this head coach is not supposed to say it, right? You're supposed to kind of be like, it would be really cool if somebody told me what the heck was going on when the players were organizing their own practices, because there's NCAA rules about number one, you can only practice so much because these kids are supposed to have lives. And number two, you can only have so many coaches because poor schools can only afford so many coaches. The reality is these kids practice 80, 90 hours a week, and they're up at 5 a.m. working. I cannot castigate Nebraska for something that Michigan does and it's been doing and got in trouble for. Yeah.
But the part of when practices were not that, and that's the point, it's specific to during COVID, practices were not allowed to be had.
Right.
And they said, go find an off campus facility so that you can avoid the term we would use here would be the folks on the hill. I don't know what they call them down there in Nebraska. I don't think there's a single hill in Nebraska, so they can't call it that. But were players organizing things and doing things, and were maybe they encouraged? And I'm not saying just admit, you know, across the country, even during, I'm sure they were.
So that's the thing.
Many,
I think
how many strength coaches were told to find an undisclosed location that would be a great place to keep a secret so that nobody will know. In particular, my boss will never find out. I don't think that happened at most places during COVID. I think that players may have gone to work out. I think players may have done things secretly so they didn't get in trouble. But I don't think head coaches were telling their staff, their strength coach, and others to organize these things, to do these things so that they can't be caught by their boss.
Okay, so the way it's supposed to work is the head coach is not supposed to say it. Somebody else is supposed to say it to the head. If you're the strength coach and you haven't done this before and you haven't seen it done before, you're supposed to go, okay, here's how you do it, right? It's the same way that, like, they pay the players in the SEC. The head coach is not supposed to go and tell the assistants, okay, when you cheat, you're supposed to do it without having some sort of record of the head coach saying, please go cheat. That's the only thing the NCAA cares about. And number two, you're not supposed to do it during COVID. The reason,
that's the point. Right. That was the point. That bit. Correct. There have been plenty of workouts. I get your point.
We're all cheating here. So let's not. I don't want anybody pretending that like Nebraska is a big cheater because they have. We're all cheating here.
That are not student led.
Right.
Correct.
That's right. And strength and conditioning coaches, because they have access to those kids, that's why they're the ones who get to do it. Right.
I'm not. And the fact is, if you don't have the strength and conditioning people there, it's not as safe for the kids.
Yeah.
Kid gets hurt, right? You need someone, you need not the quote unquote adult in the room, but a professional that if a kid twists his ankle, right? You know, kid gets something happens, you need to have someone there. Kids fall, pass out, like things, serious things have happened.
Absolutely.
In these things, right?
These are ridiculous rules that everyone doesn't follow because they're ridiculous rules. Okay.
So my guess is some of these or a lot of these will go away, starting with the Constitutional Convention that they're throwing in November, whenever it is in the fall, and they're going to vote on it in January or February, whenever it happens. My issue is not with the analysts or the consultants. My issues weren't with the players working out. It was purely the language of he instructed the strength and conditioning coach to go find an undisclosed secret location so that they could hide it from the administrators on campus.
Yep.
Like that, because even if that was against NCAA rule, it wasn't against NCAA rules at the time, which it was, so it's an NCAA violation. I don't know, Seth, about you, but if you did that in like a professional environment, like, okay, not football, but like a professional environment, if I told Anthony to go do something unscrupulous and said, make sure you do it off-site so that Matt doesn't find out, I'm pretty sure I'm not here the next day.
I mean, yes. Keep in mind, the reason why people are breaking this rule all over college football is that it's a stupid rule, okay? No one's going to be able to compete if you can actually only practice the number of hours that the NCAA lets you practice. So they have a rule that no one follows, and when you do that, you're fostering a atmosphere of noncompliance, right? Like, the NCAA is responsible for that, and I'm not going to hold anybody's feet to the fire because of that. Undisclosed location, whatever. The thing about it is the COVID, right? Nebraska had this whole sense, and they're still putting it out there, that like they've been big red pilled about COVID, right? That they are the ones who saved the Big Ten because we weren't going to have a season until Big Red came along and made a big stink about it. They were so immature about this. They're the ones who almost got the season canceled for everybody. And what they were doing was going around COVID protocols while nobody else was practicing, while people were actually paying attention to this. So that's the difference. There was there were COVID protocols in place to make sure that teams were not having outbreaks so that we could all have a season. And Nebraska said, we're going to get an edge because we don't believe in this disease. This is fake. People aren't really dying like my reader just died. People are not dying. People are not getting sick from this. This is not real. We're going to get around it, and then we're going to be better than everybody else. And I want to know how well that worked out for Scott Frost. But that is why this is happening to them right now, and that's why they deserve every single bit of it. I really don't care about the rules they broke, because everyone breaks those rules. The reason why we're holding Nebraska's feet to the fire is they broke COVID protocols because they didn't pay attention to it, and they tried to make a big deal about how they were being, you know, how they tried to get an edge by putting everybody else in danger. That's why they're in trouble, and that's why we're mad at Nebraska. The rest of it, I really don't care. Analysts should be coaches. They should have more coaches on the field.
Yeah, I completely I think what you said is pretty much spot on. Maybe this is the karma coming back to him, which is why they created those ugly big red uniforms. And maybe it's karma to come back and bite him in the butt. I don't know.
That people believe that. I mean, you're talking about the overalls. Yeah.
Those have to be real and those have to be great. And you'll never convince me otherwise, even if they're never worn in a game, that they're not real, because they're just so good looking that you just can't tell me otherwise.
Now they have to wear
red overalls in a game. Now it just has to be done. There's no question about it. I also got kind of thinking about it, because they had, and maybe it's all tied together, and we'll maybe find out. Their AD, retired abruptly.
Mm-hmm.
It was not one of those, and he's a guy that would have had a going away kind of thing. He retired abruptly. They bring in Trev Alberts. So I'm assuming that they're not unhappy with their 12-20 football coach, but if they are, now, Seth, I always thought that if you go 12-20 as a football coach, that would be considered losing your job for cause, because you're losing, but apparently that's not the case. Do you know his buyout's $20 million until January?
Okay. But if
these are actual violations, his buyout's zero.
Oh, I see where you're going. I mean, they brought in Trev Alberts because Trev Alberts is Scott Frost's boy.
I know that. But they got rid of two analysts who were probably the guys that turned him in with the footage of this analyst thing.
Think?
They're not analysts anymore. Because the question is, there's only two things that could have come out of this. It was, did this come out because he was being set up because someone didn't want to pay a buyout and they wanted to get rid of him, which is not likely? Or is there a disgruntled former somebody like there was at Wisconsin for basketball?
Uh-huh.
Right? That's how it came out at Wisconsin basketball. It was a former disgruntled guy that didn't get the job that he wanted, or the promotion he wanted. The analysts that were probably being, coaching that they didn't, whatever, and they're now not there anymore. That's where it came from.
Unless you are an incredible circumstance, like the local paper actually is not for the local team. Like, except in situations like
blue blood program in America.
Unless you are like the one program in the entire country who has real journalists sitting around trying to report on things and then just don't like the head coach at that time. That does not happen. The way that this always comes out is the disgruntled former assistant, right? Because you could turn in every, like you said, Alabama was the ones who started having these assistants, right? These analysts being coaches, and then Ohio State was the next one. And there was when Madison went there, one of the Ohio State recruits said like, I think it was Harrison, Zach Harrison. When he was being asked what he saw different about Ohio State versus Michigan, he was like, they're just so much more professional there. There's just so many more coaches. There's so many people like working with you directly. Mm-hmm. And like that was like, okay, the NCAA at that moment, when you have a recruit saying the reason I'm looking at Ohio State over Michigan right now is that they're a professional operation that has way more coaches, right, than the other places because they're breaking the rules. That was the NCAA's moment to be like, all right, do I want to do anything about this? And the fact is they don't ever want to do anything to Ohio State or to Alabama because that's their cash cows. So once that was proven, everybody, it was open season. And I know Michigan's followed suit as well. So we're not clean here.
Right. Because Jim was asked about it, because players have talked about some of the analysts that have helped them. Now, analysts can help them not being coaches. So, like, there is that too. But so that's why I said I have not. The analyst thing, I read that. I'm like, that's your lead? Like, the lead is the COVID part. Everything else is below it because the other stuff. So,
well, we haven't. I mean, because we, and we're guilty of this too. We're not reporting on our team as like every single time they have an NCAA violation that we hear about, we're reporting it, right? Like, people are not going to do that because everyone knows how corrupt the NCAA is. But because of that, people are not that informed about this stuff. So when you hear Nebraska broke a rule, and it's a hard and fast rule, and you have the coach on record saying that he broke the rule, it seems like an open and shut case, and it's very easy to, no, right? But we have not done a very good job of informing people how broken the NCAA is. This is like late-stage Soviet Union broken level right now, okay? They have all these stupid rules that nobody follows. There's an entire economy. Do you notice how fast some of these schools were able to, like, just put money into the pockets of their players? Like, oh my God, an Ohio State guy is driving a truck that he was given by the local dealer. Jeez, I wonder how that deal was set up so fast.
Hmm.
Right? Like, we've known about this stuff for years, but we have not, but it's really hard for people to see a black market, especially because nobody wants to report. The stuff that we get is mostly about Michigan, right? So we're not going to talk about when Michigan's breaking their rules. I know sometimes about other schools, but I sound like a jerk when I'm talking about like how Georgia breaks the rules all the time. So like I get stories, but like we have not done a good enough job of informing people of how broken the NCAA is. It is absolutely 100% broken. It's a joke. They have nothing. They have nobody looking at these things right now. The only things that come to them are when they are gift wrapped in their lap by some former assistant who's mad about something, right? Or like Tennessee, we're like, okay, how are we going to get rid of our coach? I know. Find some violations. Do we have any violations? Yeah, it's Tennessee. We're one of the biggest rule breakers in the country. Of course we have violations. I mean, come up with the McDonald's bag. Remember that McDonald's bag? Yeah, that was stupid. All right, use that one. Right? Like that. That's how this is working right now. It's a broken system. So we've been talking a little bit about this, but like how the Pac-12, the ACC, and the Big Ten are kind of getting together and talking, like, what are we going to do about the SEC? And that's about TV rights, and that's about the future. And Sam said some wonderful things about that before, which I think everyone, I should go back and transcribe and just put what Sam said from a couple weeks ago, because that was like the definitive statement on what's going on there. But the one of the things that they've got to be discussing is, do we just leave the NCAA? Because the NCAA is so messed up, the only thing that's still working of it is the NCAA basketball tournament. And you can have that basketball tournament without the NCAA.
So I think you can. Well, that's my biggest question at the end of the day. And this is going to come up because they're going to have this constitutional convention for the NCAA in the fall. And they're supposed to have a vote on it coming up in the spring. And I'm assuming this potential alliance, part of it is that, you know, three conferences worth of votes carries more weight than the one conference's worth of votes. So you can help push your legislation through. But you won't lose March Madness part if you split away from the NCAA is not a guarantee, because the biggest part about March Madness is all those small schools that still will want to be a part of the NCAA.
Oh yeah, they're going to come to the table and make a deal.
Yeah, or the Big East, who's not, they're not necessarily small schools, but they're basketball powers, but they don't have anything to do with football.
Well, and the Big East can come along for basketball if they want to. Like, I'd love for them to be part of the basketball, you know, foursome or something like that we have, but you're not going to get rid of the NCAA tournament. It's too good. They all make too much money. So if it came down to it, let's say that the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12 say, we're going to leave the NCAA. It's just riddled with SEC people, right? It's just controlled by the SEC. It's just it's the Soviet Union. We're going to leave it. We're done, right? And we're going to form our own thing. The first thing everyone's going to do, once they've all had their hackles and whatnot and everything done, is they're going to turn around and say, well, the NCAA tournament is a big moneymaker for all of us. How can we make this work? And making it work, it's really easy. Whatever organization we create, like, you know, it's the ACAA, right? Like, the American League, whatever, that's whatever we're calling it, that and the NCAA can work together to have a basketball tournament. It's not very hard to put that together.
Yeah, I mean, there are plans, and in the end, what's going to happen with that constitutional convention, because I don't think we'll have the full split. I think it's going to create more separation of who votes for what and whatnot. But in the end, the NCAA is going to become a 100% just tournament-throwing organization. They're going to get out of any kind of monitoring rules, because they don't do a good job of that anyway, right? They just write rules and they don't actually monitor them, and they're just going to throw tournaments. Now, we've also learned in the last how many months now that what we thought was them doing an amazing job of throwing all these tournaments, they don't actually do, because they shortchange most of their tournaments and don't really care about most of them, and have left a lot of money on the table by doing so. So maybe that will also help them generate, you know, with the women's tournament and the other tournaments that are under the other umbrella, which is a separate conversation. My biggest fear is if the big boys all say, we just want to create our own rules because we don't like what you're doing anymore over there, and we're going to do our own thing. There's about 60 schools, whatever it is. And where are the other 200 schools going to be when you're trying to create your basketball tournament?
Hey, they'll get the basketball tournament thing figured out. There's two different things that the NCAA is responsible for. A league that competes with the NFL and the NHL and everybody else, right? It's like a professional sports league, except for they pay their players like dogs and have all these legacy things built up, and then they use the money to fund other sports. And there is a organization that creates standards for athletic competitions at universities, which is still a major thing, which is still a big deal. And the interplay of these things has not been all bad. The things that we've done for women's sports in America are unparalleled in the rest of the country. And it turns out there's actually a real market for it once you build these things up. We would not have the women's sports that we have that people really love and people really watch and people really get into and have their heroes. That would not have been built because of biases against women athletes had it not been for this for Title IX and the system that funneled money from male sports to women's sports. So, I mean, there's been some good that comes out of it and some things that we want to be able to keep as we recognize the system is broken and try to fix the system. I don't think it's easy. I don't think that everybody is coming to the table saying, here's what's good for everybody. We're all there. It's going to be a bunch of presidents saying what's good for me, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's 200, 300. And then if actually probably even more than that, if you're taking divisions two and three and beyond, there's so many different interests that are at play here.
Right.
But I just want to clarify, did you say that the NCAA is broken? I'm not sure I heard that correctly.
It's broken? A little bit broken.
A little bit broken.
So, yeah.
I'm going to pay a guy $3-5 million and give him a stylist too, so we can run that organization while it's still broken. Let's do that too.
I think the SEC's mistake here when they grabbed at Texas and Oklahoma, right? Because they're looking down the road and they're saying, how can we make enough money to be making the same amount of money we're making now when the players actually can get their TV rights? Because that's the next step after NIL. Players can be like, well, my name, image, and likeness is on TV all the time every Saturday, isn't it?
Yes, and that gets to Andy Staples' article, I think it was last Friday, maybe it was Saturday, about the 4 million club. Uh-huh. And all the games that generate have 4 million viewers and above. And EA and I talked about it. We talked about it again yesterday. But going through the numbers of it, obviously when the SEC dominates it, the Big Ten is right on their heels of these 4 million games. But then when you go like the Big 12, when you take out Oklahoma and Texas, have two. From 2015 to 2019, they had two 4 million viewer games if you take out Texas and Oklahoma, because that was when Oklahoma State and Baylor were competing for that playoff spot back in like 15 or whatever it was. The ACC is much lower, but you have a few of those that are in there because Notre Dame goes to venues, like goes to Virginia Tech and gives them a 4 million viewer game. Those conferences, the Pac-12, from 2015 to 2019, Pac-12 versus Pac-12, they had five 4 million club games. The SEC was in like the 50s, had 55, I think, and the Big Ten had 49. The Pac-12 had five, right? So as we shift, and I know you're really into following these trends, as we shift away from this TV market size model, which is why you add a Maryland and a Rutgers,
right?
The new model is about getting as many blue bloods together as you can, because they're the ones that generate the most 4 million club games.
Right. Because what they're going to do is they're going to have, eventually all these games are going to be streamable. Right? And it's going to, and people are going to be able to pick and choose which games they watch out of the whole menu. And so the ones that people are going to want to watch are the ones that are going to be the high value. And they're also dealing with the fact that the athletes are going to be making more than they're making now, and it's going to be standardized somehow, probably with some sort of contract that takes into account that an education has a lot of value for these guys as well. And medical and stuff like that. They'll figure that part out eventually. It's going to get messy for a while, and I don't know if Michigan's going to be out ahead of everybody. I don't want to get too off track, which is that the current system is so broken that they got to do something. And the current system of voting is going to be all these presidents. There's 200 presidents, and most of them are not going to be in favor of the things that the big schools need in order to run their operations the way they need to. So that's going to, that Power Five thing, the difference right now is the SEC used to have the ACC on their side. They used to have some of the big schools in the Big 12 on their side. They used to have a couple of the Southern Pac-12 teams on their side. They used to be able to pass an anti-Harbaugh law when they're mad that Harbaugh is going down and, giving players in Mississippi an opportunity to go to Michigan. Oh my God, what are you doing? You're going to offer them an education? That breaks our whole system, right? What do you mean these guys are going to get an education from Michigan? That's terrible. What, Nico Collins getting a degree from Michigan? What are you doing? How can you take that guy out of the SEC? They were really mad about that. And then, but they had no standing because the players liked it, the parents liked it, the high school coaches liked it, like everybody liked it except for the SEC, but they were able to have enough people that they could get around them. What they did when they grabbed Texas and Oklahoma is they lost the ACC. They lost their alliance, right? They lost these other schools, mm-hmm. which are like, we benefit too from all, like Florida State's just been, you know, an SEC school all along anyway. Even Ohio State was kind of an SEC school all along. And they were all in favor of the same things the SEC was in favor for, which was, let's make sure this is as corrupt as possible because we're in the mob. And they lost some of that, some of those votes. They lost some of those guys who they could count on just because they are just as corrupt as everybody else. Because now they're worried about their own survival. Clemson's now worried about their survival against the SEC unless they join the SEC. Florida State is worried about that. Miami is worried about that. And not all of them think that they're going to get an invite. So some of them who were willing to vote with the SEC, and these votes are pretty tight sometimes, are maybe not on their side anymore, especially with big long-term things, because they want to maintain what they have. That's people are very conservative when you look at their motivations, especially if they're not, you know, if they're not looking forward. And these are not look forward people, right? These are people who are thinking about how do I keep what's mine, not what's the best way to put a new system together. And the SEC made a mistake in not realizing how important it was for them and how much the current system benefited them, because the current needs, the I need to keep what's mine needs of like a Clemson or a Florida State aligned with the SEC's needs. Once they broke that, they're a little bit in trouble now at the NCAA level.
Still have a little bit more to get to with Seth here on our MGo blog hour. See, I called, just called it an hour. It's not a round table. It's not round. It's kind of a triangle because Anthony's here as well, but it's not round.
He's not talking.
We still have more with our MGo blog hour with Seth on the other side of the break. So we're going to take a quick break, come back with more with Seth here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket.
Yes, Skip, you're welcome to join in.
Clear over there, Anthony?
Yep.
Awesome. Clear. Very cool. Very cool. Ryan is asking, I mentioned, I did address this earlier this morning on the show, asking what the Junior Colson injury, it kind of, there was a freak out because of some sort of, I'm not on Instagram, so I didn't see it. I just had people asking me about it. So I checked into it, but apparently there was some sort of a freak out, but it sounds like he is dinged up, but it sounds minor.
Yeah. I think he's out for fall.
He's going to miss, it sounds like, most, if not the rest of fall camp, which, you know, kind of sucks for him because he, you know, he misses that opportunity to get more reps during fall camp, mm-hmm. but it's not anything that should extend beyond that based on what it sounds like. So I'm not overly concerned. Yes, it would be great to have had him, you know, through the rest of camp for, you know, getting those reps to be your one of your backups in the middle and the linebacker position. And obviously the reps he'll get on special teams, but those will come back in September is my expectation based on what we
I mean, if you have if you're a true freshman linebacker, going out for a couple of weeks in fall camp is a big deal. You've got problems already.
Well, there's that. And actually, it might be good for him. He's been going through it. You get a chance to kind of refresh. Freshmen hit the wall so often because they're doing so much more than they're used to doing at the high school level that they, right? It's like mm-hmm. you get to like September. Sometimes a freshman hits a wall or something. You need to give him a little bit of a moment to break and then they come back and maybe finish strong or something like that. So I'll find a silver lining in it. I don't think that it's the concern is about the team per se in the moment. Like the concern is really about the kid, like, and he was making noise, but the concern is, you know, he just misses, but I'm not overly concerned. They kind of know what they have at the starting point, but as we said, we can squint and see the starting 11, but can you see beyond it? And they do need to work on that.
Well, I mean, as long as we're on linebacker, man, I mean, Nikki Hill Green is supposedly really popping right now. I'm hearing
that. Those are the two young guys that were getting a lot of attention.
Well, he was getting attention last year too, was Hill Green. Right? Like he was the guy that they looked at in practice and they go, ooh, we got a guy here. To the point where his old teammate from St. Francis transferred because he was like, well, I'm not going to pass him. I'm gone.
Yeah, he came from good stock. He was well coached coming in mm-hmm. and you were hearing a little noise and nothing wrong with, you know, you hear like there's a freshman or a sophomore linebacker that blows up in camp and then becomes a major contributor for your team. Nothing wrong with that, because if he's a sophomore, that means he's going to do it as a junior too, Devin Bush, right? Like you get that next year when they're only here for the second year. You get that third year. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Hill Green popping is probably a good thing, even though, you know, people are, I think, a little worried about Barrett. But Barrett was a Viper last year, and his film was pretty bad when he had to do linebacker things. He was much better as a straight-up Viper, and he kind of felt, I mean, the Wisconsin game was terrible for him. And it was terrible for him because, like, they made him into a linebacker. They made him into a real Sam linebacker when they played them because they stretch out their line. And I don't want to get the X's and O's of it right now, but that was, that's not his game, right? So I don't know what they'll do with Barrett. I don't know how they're going to work him in. They might try him at nickel because he's a player that you want on the field and you want to be part of your team. But he might not have been a perfect fit for what they're looking for at linebacker. And Hill Green, we don't know much about him, but he was a linebacker. And he was recruited as a linebacker, and he played linebacker in high school. He's got that length that they like, that McDonald's likes. So, I mean, that's – if I hear of a guy coming up the depth chart who they were talking about last year before they really had to talk about him, and now he's performing, and now he's kicking the starter out, that's good. That's a good thing for Hill Green.
And that is you right there. You just gave a nice primer for the viewers on Ticket TV right there. That's how you decipher code during fall camp.
Right. Right.
The unsolicited comments, how they're mentioned, like where the names come from, like the context, like you have to kind of decipher all that. There was a little bit of mentioning of Khalil Mullins. I talked about in the countdown recently too, because he's another guy that's actually built like a true middle linebacker kind of guy. Again, we're talking about young guys.
Well, he's Cam McGrone, so he's still got a, you know.
Right, he's got development to do.
Right, and McGrone was not ready to play, his first year or so. Like, it took until his third year, I think, before McGrone started to get it. And Mullings is going to be one of those. I'm not worried if Mullings is not hugely up the depth chart right now. Like, even behind Colson, that's fine, because he's a guy whose potential was always year three, year four, year five.
Right, I mean, in year three, he's a guy that could be your locking down the middle of the defense once he's all
I'm not counting
together.
2020 as a year. That does not, like, 2020 football just did not exist. Nobody got anything out of last year.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that. And we're not going to get into this when we come back, but it's a, and no, Sheldon, I am not starting at middle linebacker. That would be, I'd be broken in half. It's, you know, when the polls come out and you're looking, I don't know how. Yes, I understand you're Alabama, Clemson, Ohio. There's certain the normal teams, but how can you take almost anything from outside of a small handful of teams from last year to then create a poll for this year? There's so many teams that had opt outs and players missing. And anyway, we're coming back on the radio here. So fall camp. What are you hearing outside of we were breaking code in the break? But it sounds like to me this has been a workmanlike quiet fall camp.
Yeah. They've kept it really tight this year, kind of like they did in spring. There has been a little bit, you know, the way that they let stuff out is they kind of pick a couple big donors or former players who get to kind of come and see and there was the day that a lot of former players got to come by and watch. So I got a whole bunch of stuff from that, but it was also, I'm sure that they planned that scrimmage and that to show them what they needed to see, right? So they were telling me things that I'm like, oh, well, okay, that sounds like exactly what the program wants me to know.
and you know, it's interesting because I remember, you know, going back a few years, I would bump into people like, yeah, I was at practice on Tuesday. And then they would give me their report. And then you'd see, like, I was at practice on Thursday. And they would give me a report. Right. And the person with the Tuesday report, like, player A was the best quarterback and it wasn't even close. And then the person was like, I was there Thursday and player A was awful. Player B was the best quarterback by far. And what we all have to remember, if it's spring ball, it's what you're seeing one of 15, right? If it's fall camp, you're seeing just one of those practices. And as you point out, there's probably even a little bit more to what they're seeing, as in, we don't mind if you see this part and we're going to let it out there. But if you hear from a former player that, you know, Cade McNamara was unbelievable in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what did he do in the other six practices so far? Like it's still only a sliver of information.
Right. Well, and there's some former players who pay more attention than others and are able to kind of pick through some of the stuff, right, in order to get at what's going on there. And Some of them have actually been pretty helpful in kind of telling me what's going on with certain players. All of them said that the defense looks way better than they did last year. They're all, even if like some of the players themselves, they're not too high on, they say that it's just a more cohesive unit. And then the other thing that I keep hearing again and again and again, as if like they really want us to know this, the offensive line is, quote, gelling. They're more positive. They like their coach a lot better. I don't know how many ways they can find to try to get this information out there, but I hear you. You guys did not like Ed Warner.
And they seem to really like Sharon.
Yeah, they seem to really like Sharon. So
this goes into cracking the code, right?
Yeah.
And they talk, like the other day.
That wasn't a hard code to crack.
No, that was an easy code to crack. But you get asked about the offensive line, and he unsolicited starts mentioning, you know, he mentions the first three guys that we talk about all the time. Was it Zinner and Hayes and Stuber? And like, you know that those three guys are, they're the automatics. But then he's like, we're getting close to 10. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, really? So a lot of times when you mention that, like, doesn't sound like you have any. But then when he starts mentioning the names like Trent A. Jones, who we've mentioned a little, but you hadn't heard a ton of from the coaches yet. Or you hear Greg Crippen's name, who's a young guy, so he shouldn't even need to factor in too much. But you're like, and you start to hear more and more names. The unsolicited names generally are doing well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or maybe are surprising. When Jim is very specific and talking about Chuck Filiaga's hands are finally in the right place, basically, I think is what he said. That might have been with Jansen's podcast and not in the press conference.
Yeah.
He says that is that specific, then you realize that there are, this kind of gets back to your point, that they really like their new offensive line coach, but that these changes are according to what they're thinking they're seeing and what they want to get out there. And so as you break the code, it does get me a little excited for the offensive line. Does it guarantee anything? No. But I do think that if they weren't happy with the offensive line play, the comments would be different. They would sound different.
Yes and no. So there's certain things that you're going to be looking for them to say. And Alex Drain, for our site, has taken over Football Bits for me and is doing a fantastic job of that. And he pointed this out too, is that like some of the things that they're saying so they can find something positive to say when it's not necessarily the thing we are looking for them to say, which is worrying. So like Chuck Filiaga is a great example, because his problem wasn't his hand placement, it was his placement. He had no idea where to go.
Well, yeah, he also did say that he is in his best shape and his feet are better. Like, there was another part
he's
of that
he's in his best shape, right? And his feet are better. They're not saying that he's, when he pulls, that he gets to the right guy, because his problem last year was blocking the wrong guy. They're not saying right now that he's blocking the right guy. What they are saying is that Keegan's probably passed him. So they're talking about Filiaga because they want to talk about Filiaga being positive. But when I see the potential line, it doesn't have Filiaga on there.
Oh, no, it's got, he's a part of giving them a solid 10, which is what they're trying to get to.
They want to say nice things about their players, especially as a player is in the process of getting passed. You don't want these guys getting knocked, and they don't want them getting down. And you don't want people talking about, oh, Chuck's terrible and he's getting passed, because the differences between the guy who's leading and the guy who's right behind him, especially in the process of somebody taking his job, are not that big. And True. So you don't want to, especially with a, you know, with a senior, with a guy who's been a leader on your team, a guy who, you know, you were very happy to get when you got him, you don't want to knock these guys, because people don't understand that a guy could be better than he was last year and still lose his job. People don't understand like the nuance of what they're seeing, and they don't feel like they can communicate it, and they certainly don't trust us to communicate it. So when we're picking out things, we're trying to find the nuance in what they're saying. And what they're saying with Chuck is they're trying to give us reasons to like him and be positive about him in the process of Trevor Keegan passing him, because Keegan just has more upside and played better than he did last year.
Right. I wasn't bringing up the Chuck. It's just one of the comments that stuck in my head from the other day. I wasn't bringing Chuck up because he's now going to be a starter and be a great player. Obviously, we don't know. It was more last year they were trying, like, we're hearing that, like, we're trying to find our five best. Uh-huh. Right. And now they're like, well, in the process of we're trying to find our five best, we're closing in on our 10 best. Like, to me, that just sounds like there's more available to them, right? There's just the difference in, even from 2 years ago, we heard, or the example we brought up yesterday was the year that they had the four guys that got all drafted in the first round. If you go back and listen to what they were saying about John Runyon Jr. and those guys in fall camp, it wasn't as positive even as what we're hearing right now. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be as good this year as they were that year, but the comments weren't as positive. Can John Runyon hold up and be an offensive lineman here? Like, no one's questioning the left tackle. You know what I mean? Like, there are certain things that are better this year on the offense. And so I'm comparing the comments from a couple of years ago to the comments now and the information they're giving. It doesn't mean it's that we're getting all the story, because we know we're not getting the full story. That the offensive line in particular sounds different than they said 2 years ago. And the line 2 years ago was okay. They had four draft picks. They were pretty solid.
I mean, the line in 2019 was amazing.
But going into the season, we were not talking about an amazing line. We were talking about Ken Runyon, Ken a young Ruiz, Ken Onwenu. None of those things were guaranteed. They were all major question marks.
And not on our site. I mean, we graded those guys, and we knew Onwenu was awesome at that point. PFF knew that they were awesome at that.
That was after the year. I'm talking about going into the year.
Going into the 2019 season, we already knew.
What are we talking about? Going into the 2018 season.
2018, yes.
Going into 2018, building line.
But they were terrible the first game. 2018, they were terrible against Notre Dame. They came along as that season progressed.
I meant to say, I was comparing it to what they said at the beginning of 2018.
Yeah.
Which that line by the end of 2018 was obviously much better. And then in 2019,
that's fine. All these years are so long ago now. There's been a whole pandemic since.
I know. Somebody asked me about something from 12 months ago, and I go, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the beginning of 2018, the comments about the line, compare that to the comments about the line going into 2021.
Yeah.
Right. Is very different. So I have more confidence going into this year than I did that. Those are the kind of things that I'm kind of picking apart. It doesn't mean they're going to be great or anything, although they have the potential. I could tell you what the potential is.
Well, but that 2018 line was also going up against Rashawn Gary and Chase Winovich every day on the edges. So it was really hard for them to tell if their tackles were good or were terrible, or if their tackles were just human beings, because you can't stop those guys.
That's true. One final question, and it's kind of a generic question, but it's built on what you just mentioned. And we were talking about this the last couple of days too. So one of the things that we heard about that could have been holding back the offense for Michigan for the last few years is that, especially in camp, when ones versus ones, they were going against Michigan's defense and you didn't get a good look against what you might actually see, because the Michigan defense was so different than what you were going to see against most teams, and it didn't necessarily give you a good look. Or vice versa, the offense wasn't very good. It didn't help the way the offense plays versus the defense, and they practice, all those things kind of play against each other. I think that in fall camp, this offense will be better prepared for the season because the style of defense they're going against this season.
Because they're playing more. Yeah, they're playing more cover two. And that's been a problem with Harbaugh quarterbacks going all the way back to Spate, was that none of them. And then, and Rudock, he played against cover two all the time. He played at Iowa. So he was seeing cover two every single day in practice,
DNA,
right?
It's in their DNA,
yeah, every time they went one-on-one, that's all he was seeing. And he was good at that. The other guys, they were noticeably better against man than they were against zone. You remember Spate in that Florida game at the beginning of the season, right? That Michigan eventually won, but he had two picks very early on where he did not anticipate a cover two zone guy being where he was, because he was watching the cornerback come and he was watching the cornerback drag out of his zone and thought that he was seeing man and threw the ball down the middle right into a cover two zone. So, I mean, those were little points that would come up all the time because this team, I think, wasn't practicing against cover two, or when they were practicing against the scout team who didn't know how to run it very well. And they weren't very well versed in it. So I think that the more mixed your defense is, a little bit, you're going to give your quarterback probably a little bit better look. I don't know why that was a problem. One of the other problems for the offense is they just got in their way a lot of times. They've gone into this hole, and we mentioned the 2018 Notre Dame game because that was a classic example. Last year against Rutgers, before McNamara came in, they were doing it with Milton. They did against Michigan State as well, where they run fake reads. So they run a zone read offense. They run a option offense without actually having the quarterback run option turned on. And teams know it, and they key the running back, and they go after the running back, and they are not equipped to deal with that. And they just burn drives to the ground with this idea that if you run your quarterback, he's going to get hurt. And what happens is they get behind the sticks, they get into third and long, and they get their quarterback sacked or hit as he's throwing the ball, which actually does get their quarterbacks hurt, and then they get their quarterbacks hurt.
And put your defense in even worse positions, or you just give up free points.
And it drives me nuts because there's been studies after studies on this going back to the 2000s about running quarterbacks versus passing quarterbacks. Running quarterbacks do get banged up the way that running backs get banged up. They have lots of little things, right? Like the bruised fingernails that you see, and like the toe thing.
But the worst quarterbacks are which kind of quarterbacks, Seth? How are they getting hit? Not getting hit running, right? They're getting hit from the blind side by a pass rusher?
Right, and so they get rib injuries and shoulder injuries. And what's been happening to Michigan quarterbacks? Rib injuries and shoulder injuries. And that affects their play as quarterbacks way more than all all the little dings, and there are more of them, but they're dings that happen to people who are running the ball, who are going down on their elbows or going down. Like, all their joints are going to get beat up just like our running backs, right? Like that, there's no way to avoid that. But if you're running your quarterback, you're not going to get him as injured because teams are afraid to come off the edge and really attack you that way, because your quarterback, even if he's not a great runner, if you go upfield and the tackle goes with you, boom, big wide C gap, right? So like that is a thing that, like, you know, you're not going to get to the level of Denard. But like, even when we had, you know, Devin Gardner was not on the level of Denard, but he was a running quarterback and he was very good.
I'll never forget Stephen Three running the ball against Wisconsin. Okay.
Yeah.
Do that, right? Like, I know it's an anomaly of a play, but if Stephen Three can pull that off on a read option play, then the read option is available for every non-John Navar quarterback on the roster.
And that helped the quarterbacks. I mean, they still couldn't pass the ball very well, but that helped the quarterbacks. When you look back and remember that weird Minnesota game where Sheridan was like on the money, right? But Minnesota was not attacking off the edges. They were having guys sit on the edges because they knew they were facing a rich rod offense, and then they knew that they had to worry about the quarterback running outside, and that took some pressure off the passing game, when especially their play action game. And Michigan took advantage of that. Now the next team that they played corrected it, and we were bad again. But that extreme level of carefulness from the edges, who don't want to come around the edge and pressure the quarterback on the pass because you're afraid that they're going to be running a zone read and the quarterback's job is going to be able to get outside, take some pressure off the pass rush and gets them, you know, that half second. We're only talking about little half seconds here, right?
Right.
If you can add a half second to every single one of your offensive plays, you are a completely different offense.
Yeah, no question about it. We're going to continue breaking this down. We went a little long here as it was, but it's always fun talking football with Seth. He'll be back with us again next week. Craig will return with us next week as well. He was traveling today, but a lot of fun. Sam will be back in the air chair on Monday as well. So next week when you're with us, Seth, it'll be back with Sam as well. But really fun conversation. Appreciate your time. Appreciate everybody listening. And thank you, Anthony, as well, for doing a great job with the ones and twos. You've been listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
By hail to the victors! By hail to the victors!
Damn, I forgot. Oh, that's going to the X's and O's stuff, and it's in my damn notes. Like, I wrote it down.
It's all right. It's all right.
Damn, I forgot. Oh, that's going to the X's and O's stuff, and it's in my damn notes. Like, I wrote it down.
It's all right. It's all right.